everyone. Welcome all. Step right up. Step right up, ladies and gentlemen. Portal Gaming Podcast, episode number 173. The Bit Shuffle is coming at you right now. Howdy, everybody. Portal Gaming Podcast, a podcast brought to you by a store called The Portal, which is located in Manchester, Connecticut. For more information, you can log on to www.theportalct.com. You can check us out on Facebook, The Portal, and on Twitter, at PortalGaming60. That's where you will find me, your host for this episode, The Brant. Howdy, everybody. Portal Gaming Podcast, a proud member of the Dice Tower Network. For more awesome podcasts, you can go to www.dicetowernetwork.com. And you can also check us out on our somewhat brand new YouTube channel, Step Into the Portal. We're now over a year old. But you want to go over there to Step Into the Portal. You can see us live streaming games, playing games. Sometimes the podcast is recorded live there as well. You will see mainly me right now as I'm recording a lot from home, but you can go back through a whole catalog with a whole bunch of other people, a lot with Larry and I playing some games live. But I am joined by a special guest this episode, and it's none other than Carl Van Osteren. Carl, how are you?
Hey, what is up, Brant? Thanks for having me. That was an energetic intro. You are not kidding. But yeah, happy to be here. Yeah.
That is always the reaction people have. Whoa, that turned on a dime. So
I am ready. That was my cup of coffee. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I bring it. All right. Carl, you've designed some games. I have played some of those games. What are some of the games that you have designed?
Yeah, thanks, man. Co-designed Kapow, which is a dice-chucking game with craftable dice that I've seen at the store before and played with a bunch of your customers, which is a blast. Kapow is a superhero dice-chucking game. Then I did Merchant's Cove. I co-designed that with Johnny Pack and Drake. That's a game that's all about highly asymmetric merchants in town. And then, yeah, I think I have a game on Kickstarter right now called Bardwood Grove. So that is my list.
Awesome. Nice. Yep. Yeah. And Kapow is going to be with Wise Wizard, right?
That is correct. So also, yeah, we self-published Kapow back in the day. It feels like it was forever ago. Probably wasn't that long ago. But yeah, then we were lucky enough to run into Wise Wizard. They loved it. It fit their portfolio really nicely. And they are, they've picked it up. We had another successful Kickstarter and they're running with it. Yeah.
Nice. Yeah. No, I haven't played Bardwood Grove, but I played the other two. And they're both a blast. So, and you are a Connecticut resident, yes?
I am. I am about 20 minutes from your shop, which is awesome.
There you go. Nice. Yeah. So we've played a few games together. I specifically remember playing We're Doomed with you. That's one that I remember playing.
That's right. That's right.
I love that game.
Yeah. Good shout. I've forgotten that. But when you said it now, I'm like, oh, that was a good time. Yeah.
It just feels like one of those games that we're just not going to get back to for a while with present conditions. So,
indeed. Yep.
There's all that. Yep. I do want to let people know that the portal will be open 24 hours on November 6th. We'll be playing from midnight to midnight for Extra Life. We won't have quite the Extra Life events that we've had in the past because obviously everybody's just getting back to opened up. But we do want to be open for gaming during that time, and we'll have lots of games and other things for people to do. So feel free to stop by for that. Carl, do you want to tell us about some games you've been playing lately?
Yeah, I'd be happy to. I got two here. So I've been playing a lot of games, like as we all do. But I when you asked me to think about what I wanted to review, these are the two that I want to talk about. So I'm going to start off with like a lesser known game that I feel like deserves a good shout. Played this recently. I thought about it and I'm like, why does this not have a little bit more love? The game is called King and Assassins. I played it with the guy we were just talking about, Larry. This is a two-player game that I swear we set up and taught in about, I don't know, 65 seconds, right? So everything was laid out, set up, has some cool looking minis. There's all these little assassin minis. There's king and soldier minis. It sets up fast. I knew the rules in a minute, like I said. And the premise is super simple, but it's like super fun. And I just feel like this is a great two-player game that like I want to pick up and play with my kid. I want to like challenge my brother. It's just one of these really fun, suspenseful two-player games, because the idea is one player has the king and a handful of soldiers surrounding him. The other player takes the control of all of the townsfolk, but three of those townsfolk that are in the town are secretly assassins. And you've got this cool little map. There's actually, I think, two maps, one on both sides of the board. And there's buildings on the map, but essentially a grid. And the king has to get, without dying, across the map into a little, escape house. Very simple premise. But as you start to play this game, you essentially flip over cards, and they're very straightforward. It tells you how many moves that you have with your soldiers and your king, and how many moves that the assassins have. And you just have to navigate your way through this mess of townsfolk without getting assassinated. And I don't know, it was so simple in design. It's obviously lightweight, but it's one of those games where you're like, wow, I could play this 40 times and it would be different every time, because it depends a lot on the psychology of your opponent. And are they trying to bluff you, and who have they hidden, and why did they hide the assassin on that townsfolk? I ended up losing pretty badly to Larry. He killed me.
Welcome to the club.
Yep, for sure. He killed my king probably within about 8 minutes. He bluffed me pretty hard. I was walking by a building. I successfully took out one of his assassins with my soldiers, but I walked by a townsfolk and he didn't make any move on my king. So I was like, all right, that appears to be a safe townsfolk. I don't need to worry about. Let's run for the exit. So of course, right as I passed by the roof of that person that I thought was safe, Larry revealed that was in fact a bluff, and on his next move, swooped in and double stabbed my king to death from the rooftop. So I found that hilarious, fun, and if I had more time and it wasn't already, you know, close to midnight, I probably would have called for a rematch. But yeah, the game again is King and Assassins, and had never heard of it. Glad that it was brought to the table. Obviously, it's limited to two player, but it's got this cool little asymmetric two-player vibe going, and it's just so fast. I feel like it could be a great filler game during a party day or a game night, or like I said, just a great way to like challenge your kid or a friend to a quick duel. So loved it, wanted to give it a shout, and just to feel, I just feel like it deserved a little bit more love. So yeah, I'll swing it over to you. I'm assuming maybe you haven't played it. Have you heard of it before?
I have played it. I've
nice.
Also lost to Larry in the game. yeah, just as you were saying it, it was bringing me back to whenever I must have played it, August or September of last year is going to be my guess off the top of my head. Nice. And actually mine was very close. I couldn't get my king. I think I drew a low number and my king could step to the space outside the door. And then he had two townsfolk that were within range. I'm trying to remember exactly the rules, and I could box one of them in. So I had a 50-50 call, and it was the exact same thing. He had bluffed me by like backing that one up or not moving that one when he could have. So I boxed the other one in, and sure enough, it was not the one that I boxed in, and he beat me.
He is such a snake, that guy. I mean, we could have a whole episode just about Larry, I feel like. Yeah, that's what I mean. I feel like every time you play that game, it ends in a funny story, right? It's like every match, even though it's short, is just sort of hysterical and lends itself to a replay, you know? So it's a cool one. Yeah.
Yeah. And the other thing I feel like is I'm not a fan all the time when people review games and say, oh, it's short, it's easy to teach, it's over quickly. Like, well, what if I want it to be complex and I want it to take a while? Like, I mean, people talk about TI4 and their experience, like, obviously it's hard because TI4 takes 6 to 8 to 10 hours. So people aren't going to get those plays in, but it doesn't mean it was like 10 wasted hours. Cause I could have played, you know, 20, 30 minute games in that time. There was an experience that, but this game really does fit that bill. Like the idea is you're up and you're playing and you could play best of three in a good amount of time. And I think that
you could extend
makes
it
a good short game. Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. I don't necessarily have any like internal bias against like short versus long. Like to your point, it's just like, hey, did it set out to do something and do it well? And I feel like that was the goal of the game and it hit it on the head. Yeah.
Yeah. I think recently it's been that new Terraforming Mars, you know, the Ares expedition, everybody says, oh, it's shorter than Terraforming Mars, so it's better. And I'm like, well, actually it doesn't have the decision space that Terraforming Mars has. So I don't think it is better, but I appreciate that people want to play it more. Like that's not a problem. But anyway, that's just a little gripe I have. It's not a major issue. I got to play Furnace. I picked this up at Gen Con, and this is a short game. it doesn't look like it's going to necessarily be that, but this is an engine-building game. If I tell you the theme, you might run the other direction. You are 19th century capitalists trying to accumulate your wealth in the coal, iron, and what's the third resource? I can't remember the other one. Just, I guess, industry business. But the game just does a great job. It is an auction game. So you lay out a number of cards based on the number of players. I think it's 6, 7, or 8 for a 2, 3, or 4 player game. And it's an auction game that also works well at two. I'm not going to explain the two-player mechanisms here, but just rest that knowing that it does play well at two. It has a good, simple mechanism to do that. And then you have four tokens. You have a 1-4 token, and you bid. And the highest bid on each card, you just go around one at a time playing, the highest bid on each card will win. You can't tie somebody, so if they place their four, you're out of luck. But what's really clever is you then go through the cards left to right after everybody's bid. And let's say I played the four, but you played the three, Carl. Well, there's a what do they call it? I can't remember the term, but there's a term where you basically you get a payout. And so on the top of the card, it might say you get an iron bar, and whatever number you bid, you get that many times. So if you put your three there, you're going to get three iron bars. So in some cases you're not trying to win, you're trying to be one under the bid.
Then
you'll get the payout, and then some of them give you just coins, and some of them give you like trade ups. Oh, oil is the third one, of course. Oil. Coal, iron, and oil.
Yeah,
we figured it out. So that's what you do, and then you get all your cards, and then you can take these cards, and they all have abilities, and then you can just kind of trigger them in any order you want. So you might do a card that says, oh, you can, you know, gain two oil. And then the next card says you can spend an oil to gain five coins. And then the next card says, you know, you can trade an oil and a coal to get 10 coins or whatever it is. And you're trying to accumulate that wealth. The other interesting part is your starter card will give you an upgrade token, and an upgrade token allows you to take one of your cards and flip it over, and the other side upgrades the ability. So the one that gave you two oil might now give you three oil, or give you two oil and the chance to cash something in for money as well. So you can upgrade your cards as you go through, and there's other ways to get more upgrade tokens to kind of upgrade. The advanced mode is you draft those cards, you place them in a line, and they cannot move. So however you put them in order, I've been too afraid. I'm afraid that's going to AP the game, so I haven't played that mode. But a lot of people say they like it better because it actually doesn't, because you're just stuck. Like, well, I didn't like my choice from two rounds ago, but I'm stuck with it. So, and that's the game. You go through four rounds and you add up your coins and that's it. It's over. Leftover resources are worth nothing. And then the only other thing is, I think there's five special abilities in the game. So you get an investor that has a special ability, and they're kind of fun. I wouldn't say they're like Marco Polo game breaking or Glory to Rome style cards, if you've played either of those.
Yeah.
But they're pretty powerful abilities. Like, one is you have an extra two bid token. Another one is you can use one of your cards twice. So they're pretty powerful. They feel like good powers, right?
And you're saying each person gets one of those. So it has that, you know, variable player power vibe. Okay.
Yeah. And that's the game. I mean, I think at 3 and 4 players, it topped out at maybe 40 minutes. Like, I think it says 30 to 60 on the box, but a two player game, I said I wouldn't explain, but you literally just roll a die and place a bid marker. Like, that's it. That's all you have to do. But it just blocks spaces real easily and randomly. I think two-player, like, once we knew it, my wife and I played it 20 minutes.
Dang.
So I feel it's about 10 minutes per player. I tend to play with groups that are a little faster. So obviously when you're trying to learn, you know, you might push an hour with a four-player group the first time. But again, that is kind of the joy. So another one where the speed of it, you don't feel like you're stuck in these auctions, or these auctions break you. You know, you don't really lose your bid. You actually gain something by bidding and losing, which is kind of that modern style, right? It's a little bit of the everybody gets a trophy.
But I know what you're saying, but it feels good.
But it's like, you know, it's a lot more fun than like, well, I outbid you and now you're out of the game after round one. You know, I mean, we've all had the poker night where we overbid two hands in and then we're just hanging out.
Totally. Hey, I had a question about it. I was going to ask you. So at the top, you were like, don't run away from the theme, right? And I was like, all right, the theme maybe isn't like right up my alley. But my question for you is, given the theme, do you feel like when you're playing the game that theme is like tied to what you're doing? Do you feel like it's intertwined pretty well? Does it give off that good vibe? What's the art like? Like, paint the picture of the experience.
I don't think so. I think it's pretty mechanical. No. Coal is cubes. You know, iron is trapezoidal. Like, it feels like they're just resources. It makes sense. Like, you're trying to upgrade your resources. Like, coal turns into iron and whatever into oil. And you're trying to upgrade and you're trying to make money, right? Money wins. So it kind of has that capitalistic feel. I don't feel dark and dirty. Like, it doesn't have that feeling to it.
You're not grimy.
No, it doesn't have that kind of feeling where, like, I feel like I'm underhanded or I'm cheapening my labor or my workers or something, you know? Gotcha. You don't get any sense of that. It's literally just buy industries and bring them up. So it definitely paints a positive light on that for the most part.
Yeah, you're going for riches. Ultimately, you want to be the most successful. So there's that, I guess, tie-in. Okay, cool.
Yeah, but... I don't know if it could be something different thematically. You know, you could trade resources. Otherwise, I always think my wife, what was the game? Pulsar 2845. You remember that game?
I know it. Pulsar. Yeah, I haven't played it.
Yeah, but it was like a whole space thing. And my wife doesn't like space. And she was like, she came up with the whole theme of like, why don't you be like druids in the forest and you're going through and you're collecting like the spirits of the forest. And I was like, that's amazing. Like that theme would draw me in more than space, you know?
Yeah, right.
So you do wonder. So I'm trying to think, could this be druids in a forest? I always try to think of that. But I think capitalist makes more sense here.
Yeah, like it does. It's when you were describing it, I'm like, that feels right given the theme, right? It seems to match pretty good. Nice. I was trying to decide between two others. I'm going to do a quick mini review. So I play, because it's a newer game that I think a lot of people have played recently, so maybe it'll hit home with some folks. But I did play Destinies recently, which is, I think, Lucky Duck. Came out. It was delivered. It was a Kickstarter game. It was a pretty beefy Kickstarter. It came out. And I think the big thing about it, too, that's a bit different, that's worth the conversation, is this idea that it's a game that's obviously got a very large app component to it. So, you know, it's definitely a mixed mode game where there's clearly a board and there's minis and it's beautiful. I mean, it's a really well done design in terms of art and tone and everything, but you are using a lot of app in the game, and the app is super well done. It's just one of these games where I feel like it can be divisive, because it's like, are you a traditional board gamer that maybe doesn't want the technology in their board game experience, or do you? But what I will say is, even if you kind of fall very strongly on one side of that fence, I did really enjoy the game. I thought some of the aspects of the tech where you get to scan cards and kind of see what happens after you scan the card adds some cool anxiety that is not, you know, typical in games where you're like, oh my God, am I going to pick the right card to use here? Should I use the poison, or should I use my holy cross? And it's like, I don't know which is going to have a better result. And there's some cool anxiety as you're waiting for the app to sort of give you that feedback. And it also has this really interesting, if you ever had an affinity for like choose your own adventure books, it definitely has that vibe too, where you get this interesting list of actions/decisions you have to make as you go throughout the game, explore tiles and try to, you know, essentially uncover one of two of your destinies first. It also has a lot of like kind of good old fashioned co-op vibe in it, even though it's not co-op. And I keep having to reminding myself that it's actually not co-op, because so many of the things about it feel that way, which was actually a positive for me again. So I ended up really enjoying it. I would recommend it, with that caveat that obviously it has an app experience to it, and it does cap out, I think, at three players. But anyway, that's my mini review. I know it just recently kind of hit stores and hit backers tables, but it is a cool game, and it's definitely a different experience. It's like if you're craving something a little bit different, and you're okay with an iPad nearby, it's fun. It's a good one.
Nice. Yeah, I feel I'm tired of the people who are like, you don't put apps in games, and then they continue. It's like, okay, just move on then. Like, these people are playing apps with games, you can move on. But I definitely feel like I have a scale of like how much control I want from the app, you know?
Yeah.
Like there's some games where I'm like, especially when you start playing multiplayer, it's like, I am staring at this app and I am not playing with all of you if you're controlling everything. So I really like it when you can almost pass it, or when everybody has control, like have their own app. And so then they have their own phone out and they're able to kind of do some of that. So those are the games that I'm really looking forward to, where it's kind of like, yeah, we're all on our phones, but we're also present, as opposed to one person's kind of
just sort of things. Just like head down into the app by themselves. So this definitely is more the former, and that's a great point. Like, I liked that element. I played two player with my kid, and I mean, he was just as interested in what I was doing, and I was interested in what he was doing, because it is a PV, you know, there is a competitive aspect to it. So you're sort of leaning in and be like, oh, what are you going to choose? And that, to your point, even though there was an app, it still felt like there was direct sort of table interaction going on, which is a good point.
Yep. Nice. All right. So my next game, I can't even lift it.
That is a monster.
This is Enchanters, the deluxe box by Mythic Games. So this is in their Phoenix line. And the only other thing I see here is it says Gindy. They might have been the original publisher. So this was a Kickstarter game. and it was in a pretty small box, not quite a tiny Epic box, but just slightly bigger than that. And then it was like one of those Kickstarters with expansion, and a second Kickstarter, expansion. And Mythic picked it up, and they're reviving the game. That's their Phoenix line here.
Got it.
So I want to thank Mythic and Sam Healy, who works for them, who gave me a copy of this at Gen Con. And we carried, I think this one actually went in a suitcase, but we had games this size we had to carry on the plane as our carry-on to get home.
Amazing.
This is a really fun game, but it falls in that category of games that people now use this term with me all the time, that I herald, meaning I tend to always be the person who likes the game the most. So I go around and I teach it to people, and nobody dislikes the game.
Yep.
But nobody likes it as much as me. And I never know, am I pushing this game on people, you know, in terms of that. But they definitely did a nice job. There's player boards, and they're all like with the stitching around the side. They're pretty small player boards, but they have like the stitching around the side, and you can play four players. And it has all the modes. And I actually feel like it's a game where like I like all the modes. I like the solo. I like the co-op. I like the competitive. I like the competitive with a monster or with a boss. So it's essentially a card drafting game. It almost feels like Smash Up. You take a certain number of different creature types based on the number of players, and you shuffle them all together. So the deluxe box comes with, my goodness, I think it's like 30 or 40, something like, I'm going to say 30. I'm going to err on the lower side. 30 different types of creatures. You got unicorns and sprites and gnomes and goblins and orcs and demons, and go down the list of fantasy creatures. And you've got a stack of, say, 15 of them or 16 of them or something like that, and you shuffle all of them together, and then you lay out six cards, and it's totally just a drafting game. So you can take the first card for free, or you can pay your coins that you have to draft down the line. And what's really neat is you start the game and you have an item, a weapon, and you have an enchantment. And in the start, they're nothing, although there's an expansion where you can each start with a specific weapon and a specific enchantment, and you draft these cards, and they almost cover your previous card. And so your weapons tend to give you power, and your enchantments tend to give you block or defense, and they partially cover. They cover about three quarters of the card, maybe even 5/6, just because I like to be exact as a math teacher. And the bottom portion sometimes has those bonuses. So if I cover a card, but at the bottom it's giving me attack power, I keep that attack power for the rest of the game. But some cards might, like I might get an axe and it gives me 3 attack power and 1 on the bottom. So it's 4 attack power. But when I draft a new item, it'll only be 1 now.
I see.
And so that's going through and you're drafting these cards in these two stacks. There's actually a third stack, which is monsters come out. And they were very wise. I think it was Mythic that did this. They kind of have you go through and pull out like 2 cards per player that are not monsters and shuffle them on top. So in the beginning, you only draft upgrades, and then the monsters start coming out, which I think in the original game, monsters could just be there and then you can't kill them. So monsters come out. They're going to be worth victory points at the end of the game if you're able to kill them. And then they also have a pile where they may give you upgrades. So they might be like, oh, this monster now gives you attack power because you learn by wrestling the bear or whatever it is, those kind of things. Then there's all sorts of other things you can add. So there's a town card that will give you like just a generic action because sometimes you can't draft. So there's like a healing action. When you take damage in the game, that's actually just negative points. So you have unlimited health. You are an immortal hero, but all your damage is going to be negative points at the end of the game. So you might want to heal it so you don't have that. And there's some money trade. And there's again, a ton of those different towns that you can play with. And some of them will interact with their type, like there's bandits and they have like a caravan or something, and that goes with them. So if you play with that type, and then you can put a monster boss out, and that boss could be like something that you're all trying to defeat. So it'll have tokens equal to the number of players, and you can fight the boss and get big points or upgrades or whatever. There's quests, there's different starting abilities, there's all this stuff, because that's why it's a big box. I think it's a blast because really it's just a drafting game, but you're trying to weigh all these things out. If you can't draft a monster that's in the front of the row, it will go to like a kill pile and it might attack people. So you're trying to be careful of that. Yeah, now that I'm talking about it, I'm getting even more excited, and I'm thinking about how many things there actually are in the box. I feel like I've done a good descriptor of it.
You do. You seem like you want to play now. I feel like you're
I
like,
do really want to play it. So yeah, I've played it several times, and I've really had fun, and I've liked all the modes of it. Solo's my least favorite, but I'm just not the world's greatest solo player. I am a people person. Mm-hmm. And so solo feels like I'm learning the mechanics, but I'm not getting the joy of playing another player.
Yeah, you know? Game experience.
I and I don't have a problem with solo playing. I totally get it. It's obviously been key to COVID times for a lot of people. But yeah, I really enjoy the game. But like I said, people I played it with have liked it, but they haven't loved it. But I think I love it. I think I really like this game.
That sounds, I mean, it does sound cool. I mean, even in your description, I was starting to get excited too. I was like, yeah, that does sound like one I'd enjoy. So I don't know. You're going to have to try it out on me. Teach me at some point. I'll let you know. Yeah, it sounds
cool. It's kind of that sweet spot. Like it's a 60-minute game, right? You're playing right in that. So it's not this 20-minute light drafting game, but it's not a two-hour game where you're there, it overstays its welcome. I feel like it's right in that spot. All of a sudden, the cards start running out, and everybody's like, oh, the card's running out, because that's when the game's over, when all the cards go.
I was going to ask you what the end game was and what the win condition was. Sounds like it's when the monsters are gone and most points wins.
That's it.
Simple. Okay.
Yeah, you just add up your points, and then, some items will say, like, at the end of the game, this will give you a point for every attack power you have.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Oh, and your player board also, will track. It has little trackers to track what your current attack value and defense value are, so you don't have to do the math every time.
I was going
to
say, you don't want to do that math constantly. Okay. Yeah. That cover-up mechanism is really cool. And I played a totally different type of game recently called Meadow that actually uses a similar thing, but in a different sort of integration. But the idea of like trying to figure out, okay, if I acquire this card, I retain some of the prior value of my other card, but I replace part of it too. So how am I going to manage that? That's a cool like decision every time you get your turn. I like it.
Yeah. Yep. I adore Meadow, just not at four players.
Oh, I had this. It's a great call.
it's good at two and three.
Yeah.
I never tried the solo actually. But four, it just doesn't work. So it's like one of those games where I don't want people to go to a convention and play it because they'll play it at four.
Yep. I played it on my first try on four.
I almost want to set it up with three players at a convention and people be like, it says four on the box. Like, I guess they didn't include enough components. It's three players because they don't want people to get a four first experience, you know?
Come back in an hour. Yeah. cool. I got one more think we got time because I wanted
Let's
to give a shout
out
to another one. Yeah. I got one that was like, I highly, highly recommend, it's actually not a new game. It's a pretty well known game. It's called Parks. It's probably at least a year or more old, but,
I think,
yeah. And by Henry Autobahn, I believe he just blew me away with the design. I think is part of it as someone who, you know, dabbles in game design. I was like, holy smokes, what a nice, elegant design. And what a great experience I had playing it, obviously too. And it deserves deserves every bit of its, recognition. It's such a cool game. And I just recommend everyone give it a shot. If you have any sort of affinity for just a good, elegant sort of Euro-y, but with really nice indirect interaction going on. I just had a blast playing it. I've actually only played it once, but I can't wait to get it back to the table. I think I grabbed it at your store just sort of randomly. I was like, this looks cool. It's a beautiful theme with beautiful art. It's obviously a little bit abstract, I guess, because it's about, you know, it's basically about earning points and traveling down this path. Have you played it before?
Yep.
Okay. So yeah, you know, that kind of main mechanism of everyone sort of moving down this randomized path of locations. And that's where the main form of interaction is. It's just sort of, it's got a worker placement-y vibe, but down a linear track. And you're trying to acquire these points as you go. There's equipment cards, and it's so easy to pick up and play. I feel like it's very easy to mix up and add in new content to make it different every time. It's one of those games that fits in an hour. We played it at three player, and it was just a perfect little experience, very close match. And it's just something I highly recommend everyone give a shot at some point. If you're like a Magic player and you only like, you know, two player games, maybe not. But for anyone who's ever dabbled in any sort of Euro game or sort of, I don't know, anything in that vein, it's like a must play in my book. Like, you have to give it a shot. Yeah.
Nice. Yeah, I was talking to them at Gen Con, and they were saying how this game is just selling at the parks in the stores. Like, it's just like Right? It seems so obvious. Like, make a game about the national parks and sell it in the stores in the national parks, but like it is just selling there, you know?
Yeah, and it's got enough universal appeal. You know, it is in that midway, maybe like light to midway category. So you could be just someone at a park and visiting, see the box. It's a small box with a deep experience, but it's not complicated. It could be almost like a non-gamer and get it to the table. Yeah. I bet. I'd like to see if that's actually true, but I have a feeling you could. Yeah.
It is interesting how some of these games transcend their complexity through theme.
Mm-hmm.
So like, I mean, Wingspan is the other one that I immediately right. jumped to. And it's just like everybody I know is buying Wingspan and they are not gamers. Yep. And people would ask me early on when Wingspan, oh, have you heard of this Wingspan game? I'm like, oh, it's good, but there's a lot of complexity there. You may want to go to one of these other games. But now people are just buying. They're like, oh, we have Wingspan. We love it. Oh, we play with right. the kids. I'm like, oh my gosh. Like, I don't yeah. know if I could get kids to play that game, but they are. Yeah. People are just, yep. it's just such a wonderful job. And I feel like that's how Parks is.
I do. Parks I feel like it's
definitely
in that same...
lower complexity than Wingspan in my mind. It is.
I agree. Like a notch, right? Probably, yeah. I would say, but you're right. It is. And it's, if you think about it, it's a wonderful thing for the industry if that's what's happening.
Oh, yeah.
Right. Cause that is so cool. Essentially what we're saying is it's making those types of games are making it into what I would consider like mainstream, and they're working and they're getting yeah. people to then buy their next game. And that's awesome. So yeah, props when people really hit that sweet spot. I mean, everything has to go right. The theme has to be spot on. The design has to be perfect. And those are probably two examples that I would agree are doing that. So kudos.
Yeah, no, it's great to get people, you know, sitting around the table and everything. I know for me, I just hit 40. I turned 40 like a week or two ago. And
congrats. Happy birthday.
Thank you. And, you know, grew up playing video games and all that kind of stuff. And then it just feels like I still like video games. I don't have a problem playing video games, but it's just not what I want to do. I just don't want to be in front of a screen all the time, you know? Yep. So I'll play a lot of like Switch with my family where we're all playing together. That's fun. Mm-hmm. But I feel like there's just a lot of people who are like, oh, we want to get off that. We want to play board games. And it kind of started with those of us who were a little bit more into the hobby, a little more aimed towards us. But now that it's opening up to people are like, oh, board games aren't weird. Like, it's not weird to sit around. Like, it's good because we're not sitting in front of a screen. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it is. It's this great sort of like, I don't know, counter movement in a lot of ways. I'll give you a quick story that it mirrors what you're saying is, you know, I'm about the same age. I just recently turned 40. Well, I'm lying. I'm 41. I think I'm 41. I don't know. I could be 42. I've actually like lost track.
You didn't have to divulge your age on the podcast.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's irrelevant at this point, but, so I recently found out actually through Merchants Cove, a family friend of mine. So my mom's friend's children, are in college. And it blew my mind. Not only was he interested in Merchant's Cove just because it was like, hey, cool, I kind of know someone that made a game. What's it all about? Great. But as we started to talk and figure it out, I learned that the dorm that he's in is actually a board game dorm. And I had to have him like explain that to me because I was like, wait a minute, I was in college. You know, I don't remember there ever being anything of that kind. If anything, it was like there was one guy who had like an N64, you know, and that was cool. But we're talking about a dorm that's essentially dedicated to like a club of board gamers. And we're talking about, you know, not five people. This is a lot of people. And it was like heartwarming in many ways, because I'm like, that means that if college age kids are really grouping up around board games, that what a great trend, right? Like we've been saying, like sort of getting away from the screen a little bit, having direct interaction with people in a game environment. I mean, it's just super cool. And I was like, this is a really good sign. So it's just a positive story I recently ran into just kind of by happenstance, but it got me thinking like, wow, that's a great development. That didn't exist in colleges to the best of my knowledge, you know, 20 years ago. So it's cool.
That is cool. That's wow. Yeah, I would have expected that right in the 70s and 80s. You'd almost think that would be more of a thing, but board games are like on the other side of it, which is interesting.
It is. It's like boomeranged, right? I feel like maybe back in the day there was Dungeons and Dragons groups and stuff going on, and then it just like took this big 30-year break, and now it's coming back. It's cool. Yeah.
Nice. Well, Carl, you are part of that. You are designing and creating games and bringing joy to families and people. So. You've got a new game, so I'm going to give you the space to talk about Bardwood Grove. Tell us about the Kickstarter, all the ins and outs.
Awesome. Give me a little space for a plug. I appreciate it. Yeah, so coming off the heels of Merchant's Cove, which is in my mind a good success. I was pretty pumped, and I got to work again with the same publisher and same developer, Drake, on a follow-up game in the same universe. It's on Kickstarter now, and like you said, it's called Bardwood Grove. I'll pitch the theme first. I've always wanted to make a game that had bards on sort of center stage. I think it's such a cool, underappreciated class. There's always games with wizards and rogues and fighters and paladins, but rarely have I seen you get to play as a bard. So I got to have my dream come true. I got to make a game that had bards, and every player gets to play as a bard, subclass essentially. So we have like war drumming bards, we have sword singing bards. It was just a ton of fun making all the different characters. The style of the game is pretty interesting too. So I've played a lot of deck builders in my day. I like them very much. I think it's a cool genre, but I took a new stab and a new direction on deck building that I think people will enjoy. I won't go into like every little detail, but there's an element of deck building, but without a lot of the sort of conventions that we think of when we think of deck building, like an open market, like culling cards, like drawing five and playing five, everything going to your discard. I really shook up a lot of those sort of conventions of deck building, and I think it gives like a really different experience to the game. So as bards, you're traveling around town, and within the town, you can stop in between locations and activate multiple locations when you sing your song. So every couple turns, you can sing a large tableau of song cards and interact with locations, which allows you to gain new cards that strengthen your song deck. You can also sort of save creatures. We're soothing creatures. We're not killing them in this game because we're bards. Those creature cards also go into your deck. You can get improv cards, which are cards that immediately go into your song, so that you don't need to cull anything because these are cards that essentially do not weigh down your deck with bulk. So there's some interesting new concepts around that idea of a more of an interactive new take on the deck building mechanism, while also allowing for some traditional sort of points-based Euro mechanisms in there mixed in as well. So I tried very hard to tie the theme in with the mechanisms, which is one of my big design goals as a designer, to really, really play that through hard. So I think I accomplished that. It's also cool. We have a crossover bard that the bard mechanism with the tempo wheel and the song tableau can be played as a merchant in Merchant's Cove, which was a really fun announcement we made about a week ago.
The
So
bard merchant, he sells his songs.
we call him the entertainer, and he travels around the cove and he does different things, but it uses the player board from Bardwood Grove.
That's great.
So pretty excited. The Kickstarter is doing well. Thanks for letting me plug it on the podcast. I appreciate it. And yeah, that's Bardwood.
The publisher is Final Frontier Games, is that correct?
That's right. So they have a universe called the Five Realms, which is really cool. So we got to inject the idea of having a place within the Five Realms in the Halfling realm that is basically a haven for bards, right? Of different races within the universe. So yeah, this Merchant's Cove was also in that universe, as was some of their other games prior. Yep.
Nice. Awesome. Well, I haven't had a chance to play it, but maybe we'll catch up sometime and I can try it out and then I can give it a review on the podcast, or I'll wait till it gets published and check it out then too.
Yeah,
But
either
people can
way,
check
man.
out that Kickstarter, and I will put a link to it in the podcast notes, so we'll have that there as well.
Awesome.
Cool. Well, thanks, Carl. Thanks for joining me on this episode.
It was a lot of fun, man. Thanks for having me as a guest. I appreciate it.
Yeah, you're welcome on anytime.
Cool. And I imagine I will see you at some conventions and or the portal at some point soon. Yeah.
Are you doing PAX U?
Yep, I'll be there. I'm going north to Carnage next week. That's about a 90-minute trip for us, a smaller
Okay.
convention. And then, yep, I'll if you're going to PAX U2, I'll see you there.
Yeah, we're going. It's my wife and Larry and Brian and myself, and Eric Summers actually coming with us. So,
Oh, that's phenomenal.
because
So we have a
Dice
big
Tower's not going, yeah.
there's a oh okay. So yeah, there's a pretty good contingent of CT folk headed down. We're gonna represent.
Yeah, that's right. I know. Well, there's a lot of, well, there's just a big gaming community in Connecticut, but then there's just a lot of media and designers too,
I know,
with
which is
Matt and
awesome.
Jen and
Yep.
Jason Perez and obviously Eric and us, and I'm
Yep.
missing people. Gary Pope used to be, but he doesn't do as much
Yeah,
anymore.
and there's a whole new, there's like a New Haven crew with Elm City Games, and
Oh,
yeah.
right. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. people I haven't seen in forever, so I'm forgetting their names.
No, but you're right. There's a lot, and that's awesome.
Right, yeah, they're all designers down there, too. I forgot, at Elm City.
Exactly.
Awesome. Yeah. All right, well, thanks, everybody, for joining us for this episode. My name is The Brant. With me is?
Carl Van Ostrand.
Is joining me for episode 173 of the podcast, The Bith Shuffle, because that's the most famous song. It's not quite a bard, but I went with it for the title. All our episodes are Star Wars titles, so
nice.
That's kind of
I was kind of dancing over here while you were singing.
Nice. Awesome. Thanks, everybody. My name is The Brant, and until next time, I hope you step into the portal. Bye, everyone.